So this is an enormously important program for African American children.
The President's Commission on Social Security did not make any recommendations on young survivor benefits and disability because of the loss of benefits that would be incurred. They recommended that another commission be set up to address the issue. For Free Speech Radio News in New York City, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez.
And this is radio station WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. A couple of housekeeping notes. Next week, we will be doing a one-hour fundraiser. For the 2 weeks following that, we will not be on the air. So if you want to pledge to Off the Hook, to WBAI, next week is your opportunity to do that. And we'll be on again for 1 hour from 7 to 8 next week. And we won't be on for the 2 weeks following that, just so everybody knows. And a good evening. It's a snowy night in New York. We have all kinds of things to talk about and letters to read and phone calls to take for the next hour or so. And Bernie joins us from Philadelphia. Bernie, are you there?
Snowy Philadelphia, as a matter of fact.
It's snowing down there, too.
It's amazing.
Unbelievable. Now, you know, Bernie, you were scheduled to go to Thailand right before the tsunami hit, and of course the devastation that was caused there. And then on this radio program, you talked about the Thai subway, the Bangkok subway, and how amazing it was. I have to wonder, you know, is there some kind of curse or something here? Because as soon as you rode on the thing, it crashed. And now there's all this talk about all the people that got injured. You want to tell us what happened?
Well, I don't think it's a curse. I just think I'm very lucky that.
Well, you're lucky.
I missed the tsunami just by a few days, and I also missed getting injured on the subway. Nearly 200 people got injured on a big subway crash.
Yeah, I mean, you're lucky, but you know, we've gotten at least three pieces of email from people in different countries asking that you please not visit their countries in the years ahead. Because apparently someone's out to get you.
It's really the wake of destruction that you leave in your path.
Yeah, they keep missing. I don't know.
Maybe I should get out of this country.
Well, you know what? Now that you mention it, since you've been around in this country, things have gone steadily downhill. So
you might want to
try it.
I got to go back to the subway thing. I don't want to blame a curse or the reliability of the Bangkok subway system. I mean, I rode several times on that system a couple of weeks ago, and it's truly amazing. I urge anyone who's considering a trip to Southeast Asia, even if they're not, to go there and ride this subway. It's amazing. For anyone who has any interest in subways or trains, this is a mind-bogglingly beautiful and high-tech subway system. You can't even describe it on the air. But in any case, what happened here is apparently somebody parked one of the trains in an area where it was supposed to be towed from, like off the track, but they forgot to put the brakes on it, and it rolled backwards and gathered up speed and smashed into a a car full of people at rush hour, another train, almost 200 people were injured. So this wasn't a, you know, a machine fault. This is simple human error, as most systems with computers, trains, whatever, almost everything is human error. So that's all it was.
And I guess there's no high-tech way of preventing this kind of a thing.
Well, I don't know. You'd think they'd have some sort of system that would detect, hey, the train is rolling backwards, and but they don't. And Siemens is the big contractor for the system. So maybe they should have put something like that in place. But, you know, it's only been in service since, I think, August. So it's only been in service for about 6 months, and maybe the people just aren't trained well enough. Each station has a really amazing control room. But I guess the people are just still kind of learning, and you can imagine right after this there's going to be a whole lot of going back to school on the laws of physics and gravity and things like that might be further ingrained into people's heads who operate this thing.
Well, it's interesting because I was in Paris at the end of last year, and the day after after I rode on the metro, it turned out that there was an incident. In fact, no, it was the day I was riding the metro, and it was very close to where I was actually traveling. Turns out a train operator died on duty. And basically was in the control cabin of the train, and the safety systems kicked in, and trains were able to stop all the way down the system until they found out that the guy was dead, and you know, figured out how to route around him, I guess, or whatever they did. But it was just interesting because on some systems that could have been a complete catastrophe, a disaster, but the system worked.
I saw a train operator not on the subway, but on the Thai railroad system that I rode for a 9-hour trip up the coast of Thailand. I saw the engineer fell asleep at the controls. Now, there's two engineers, one on the other side of the front car. But I had a view of the one, and I saw him doze off, and he was asleep for several minutes. But then I noticed that there was someone else driving the train. But anyhow, we hit a noisy thing. There was all these bumps we were hitting on the tracks. He woke up, and then he pulled a bottle of Red Bull, like the Thai Red Bull, which is very apparently much more potent than the Red Bull you can buy in this country. And he drank some of that, and he was awake for the rest of the trip. So I was a little concerned to see him fall asleep. I took a picture of him sleeping.
You did? Oh, I want to see that.
Right.
Unbelievable. All right. Well, of course, any kinds of horror stories like that involving mass transit will be the first to report here on Off the Hook, along with many other things, such as the growing, I guess, surveillance of our society. We talked about the fingerprinting machines on foreigners that are used on foreigners as they come into this country, which has been implemented in full pretty much over the past few months. And it's one of the major reasons why people are so reluctant to come to the United States, because they get fingerprinted and have their pictures taken and things like that. It's a very nasty way to treat a visitor. However, there's this development. Outgoing Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge said last Wednesday the United States should put the fingerprints of citizens traveling abroad on their passports. That's us. That's people like us. We talked about the possibility of our fingerprints being taken. Well, it's
going to
happen.
I mean, this is obviously going to happen, given that the U.S. is demanding that other countries put their citizens' fingerprints on the passports in order to come to the U.S. It's almost automatic that some of those countries would start demanding that the U.S. do the same.
Well, yes, but this is the U.S. demanding that it do the same. I mean, basically, the U.S. is saying we should put the fingerprints on the passports.
But it's an inevitable result of it being demanded of other countries.
Well, Tom Ridge agrees with you.
Yes.
He says if we're going to ask the rest of the world to put fingerprints on their passports, we ought to put our fingerprints on our passports. So, yeah, that's what you have to look forward to. And I'll bet, I still think they're going to start using those machines on American citizens as you walk into the United States. You'll put your thumb on the machine, and they'll see who you are. In case you forget. Asked what advice he would give to newly nominated Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff, Ridge added, be aggressive. It's a lot easier to negotiate with your allies if you've already done what you're asking them to do. So I guess we can look forward to a whole lot of other countries being invaded and rights being trampled upon and things like that.
Because if there's one flaw of the Bush foreign policy in the past 4 years, it's a lack of aggression.
I don't know if it's right for us to be criticizing George Bush on the eve of his special day, which is tomorrow, of course, the second inauguration. Certainly, there's all kinds of things going on in Washington, D.C. If you're down in Washington, D.C., we'd especially like to hear from you, because, well, there's just so much going on. There's so much security, unprecedented security. We thought we'd seen unprecedented security before, but what we're seeing now is just it's making history.
Also snow.
I don't think they counted on the snow. I don't think they counted on that.
Oh, well.
But according to Ralph Basham, which is a great name for a Secret Service guy, but his name is Ralph Basham, we don't want to leave anything to chance. We want to make sure that everyone who comes to participate in these events can do so in a safe, secure fashion. Basically, there's an immense contingent of law enforcement personnel and high-tech equipment, something that has never before been seen. There have been heightened security measures in the Capitol and other Washington locations since 9/11. But this is unprecedented, according to Basham, when it comes to the level of security that will be in effect for the inauguration and those events that are surrounding it. Now, authorities have received no specific threats with respect to tomorrow's inauguration, but are prepared to deal with any eventuality. I wonder if they sit around thinking of any possible eventuality, because I can come up with a few.
You just told me they didn't think of snow.
Apparently, that's first on the list of what they didn't think of, because they weren't able to do anything about that. But, you know, things like a Klingon warship, you know, do they have that? Is that on the list, you know, or a meteor or, you know, I don't know. How imaginative did they get? Any eventuality?
I want to be a fly in the wall where they just sit around the table and think up all the most outlandish. Because, you know, we only hear about the ones that are you know, plausible. But,
right.
You know, they come up with, you know, they must come up with some really crazy things like, well, what if this happens? You know, I really would like to read some of these scenarios that are just like, way out there, but they must have these whole contingency plans in effect for everything. So
yeah.
I'd like to read some of that.
And I think this is something that we can help with. I mean, we've been looking for our place in the new society for some time now, and I think we may have finally come up with it, concocting wild scenarios, because I think we can do that here. All right, you mentioned being a fly on the wall. That made me think about what happens if, like, Spider-Man comes and turns evil. You know, are they prepared for that?
It could happen.
It could happen. Could absolutely happen. What else? That was evident in the massive response. Yes, they're being able to deal with any scenario. It was evident in the massive response to an incident last Tuesday in which a man upset over custody of his child threatened to blow up his van a block from the White House. It prompted a 4.5-hour standoff with police. The standoff ended peacefully, but not before hundreds of officers, snipers on rooftops, gun-drawn Secret Service agents, armored vehicle, and hazard materials personnel responded to the Pennsylvania Avenue location. Imagine if there were two guys, one on either side of the building.
I'm sure that guy is well on his way to Guantanamo Bay at this point.
Who knows? Who knows? I don't think he even has a name.
I'm surprised they didn't shoot him. Remember the guy who tried to hijack the Washington Monument?
I remember that. I remember that.
And they just shot him.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
How do you hijack the Washington Monument?
Well, you have to be sort of crazy to try, but
does it have rockets underneath?
I think they want to interrogate this guy and find out who he was working with as well. All the this is the proof here of the intelligence that we're dealing with. All the federal agencies that deal with security, law enforcement, and crisis response will be housed in a single joint field office. Man.
Didn't that go wrong here? Sadly, terribly, tragically wrong at Seven World Trade Center?
They will command Coast Guard cutters and helicopters, canine bomb-sniffing units.
What if there's an earthquake?
Units? They call dogs units now? Canine bomb-sniffing units?
Well, no. The dog and its handler make up a unit.
Oh, is that what they're saying? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the handler kind of... All right. The dog is where the real...
The dog is not smart enough to do it on its own.
Oh, please.
Who drives the dog there?
The dog can get there on his own, but never mind. Customs aircraft, bicycle patrols, crowd control, a host of other security and law enforcement assets. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. Unfortunately, no one in this room is going to be there, but...
I wonder if they'll have those neat bomb-sniffing machines that we encountered in Canada.
You want to tell us the folks about that? We went up to Toronto
last
weekend, and what did we encounter?
Upon entering the CN Tower, which is the tallest tower in the world, their security was basically this machine that you walk through, and it had air jets on the side, and they just, you know, went one, not one by one, but row by row, and they shot air at you, and I guess some detector looked for explosives, and then it said pass or fail. We didn't see anyone fail, but...
Yeah, it seemed to be a lot more fun than going through a metal detector. Everybody was smiling.
Yeah.
We even took pictures, and nobody seemed to care.
Did the air blow up your skirt like with Marilyn Monroe in The 7-Year Itch?
No, it wasn't quite like that. They blew it horizontally. Yeah, they didn't go. But I imagine there's potential for that.
Hmm.
Is this
be more
like
fun that
the,
way.
The things that we keep hearing about in the rail station near Washington?
Yeah, this is exactly the same thing as in New Carrollton rail station, Amtrak station, and also the Statue of Liberty. This is old technology, but, well, relatively new technology.
Are they blowing air at people at these locations?
Yeah, puffers, it's called. And but, of course, you try to photograph it in the States, and, well, there's some trouble coming. But, obviously, you guys in Canada, I can't wait to see these photos.
Now, if you're ticketed by Green Bay, Wisconsin police, you'll get more than a fine. You'll get fingerprinted, too. It's a new way police are cracking down on crime. By the way, I'm reading this from WBAY-TV, so it might sound a little perkier than I'm used to. If you're caught speeding or playing your music too loud or other crimes for which you might receive a citation, Green Bay police officers will ask for your driver's license and your finger. You'll be fingerprinted right there on the spot. The fingerprint appears right next to the amount of the fine. Police say it's meant to protect you in case the person they're citing isn't whom they claim to be. But not everyone is sold on that explanation. What we've seen happen for the last couple of years is increasing use of false or fraudulent identification documents, said Captain Greg Urban. It's a good name for an officer who works in the city. Police say they want to prevent the identity theft that Milwaukee has, where 13% of all violators give a false name. Wow. But in Green Bay, where police say they only average about 5 cases a year, drivers we talked with think the new policy is extreme. That's going too far, Ken Scherer from Oconto said. You look at the ID, that's what they're there for. Either it's you or it's not. I don't think that's a valid excuse. And Carol Pilgrim of Green Bay says, I would feel uncomfortable, but I would do it. Citizens do have the right to say no. They could say no and not have to worry about getting arrested, defense attorney Jackson Maine said. On the other hand, I'm like everybody else. When a police officer tells me to do something, I'm going to do it, whether I have the right to say no or not.
Can you choose which finger you give them?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, now we know why they call them cheeseheads.
Yeah. Yes, Leo.
I'm just wondering, what's the point of the fingerprint, Essen? Do they run a check on your identity later on? Because there's no mention of how they mean to use that to stop false identification.
Yeah, if
well,
you have
pairing again.
Yeah, if you've never had your fingerprint taken, if you've never been arrested in a situation where a fingerprint would be taken, if you've never been in the armed services, mm-hmm. never been bonded.
But now you are. You see, now your
fingerprint is
in the system.
But what I'm saying is, suppose you've never done that, but you're for some reason under a different name. You've been a very lucky criminal, or you just hate invasions of privacy, whatever. And now your fingerprint goes with, you know, John Doe.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's you. You pay the ticket, but now that fingerprint is linked to John Doe? I mean...
And if you try to use it in any other situation, and there will be another situation where you get fingerprinted...
Under your real name.
If you go to another country or something like that, they're going to say, wait a minute, there's a conflict here. You're really John Doe, and then you'll have to change your name.
Possibly. Or they may arrest you for... violating a law previously.
That's
you used
possible.
An assumed name 10 years ago.
That's very, very likely.
I don't like this at all.
No, I don't think really it's something to be happy about. But it's something that is a precedent.
It just seems like a very easy way for them to compile a database that they've always been wanting to do.
Yeah, it's all about compiling databases. Speaking of databases, a very interesting bit of data was posted to the net this week on one of our favorite sites, Cryptome.org. Basically, a bunch of Department of Homeland Security, are these morning briefings, I think they're referred to?
Well, briefs, not briefings.
Okay, that's this contributor listed them as morning briefings.
As opposed to boxers.
Yeah. Basically, we have a bunch of, I guess, scenarios of incidents that took place. I'll read you a couple that are here. French national, or actually officers use U.S. Visit, which is the fingerprinting upon entry system in the United States. They use U.S. Visit data to deny entry to French national previously removed from U.S. According to BTS reporting, on 24 November at JFK International Airport, Rashid Mahaya, date of birth 3/29/1965, and they give all kinds of other numbers too, arrived aboard a British Airways flight and applied for admission as a visitor for pleasure under the visa waiver program. The interagency border inspection system returned several hits on Mahaya. When the CPB officer electronically scanned Mahaya's index fingers,
CPB is Customs and Border Patrol.
The U.S. visit returned a possible watch list hit. During secondary inspection, CPB electronically scanned a complete set of fingerprints and the Integrated Automated Fingerprint Identification Systems, IAFIS, identified Mahia as an alien previously ordered removed. Mahia has an extensive criminal record and has used multiple aliases. CPB officials determined Mahia to be inadmissible under VWP, refused him entry, and returned him to France. So there you go. You know, this is a situation where they found somebody and they sent him back, and they have all his information out there.
They didn't really need his fingerprints to do this. He had his passport. It doesn't say he was using a false passport, right?
No, it does not say that at all. He was giving his real name. Apparently, though, he used aliases in the past.
So the whole fingerprinting thing was completely unnecessary to stop if this person was indeed a known criminal and you know, had violated U.S. visa requirements in the past. You know, the whole fingerprinting thing just seems like some sideshow where it really didn't have any increase in effectiveness on stopping this sort of thing.
But it does have increased effectiveness as far as keeping track of people.
Oh, sure. That's what they're trying to do. It has nothing to do with safety of people. It has to do with them trying to track everybody and tattoo everybody. It's the whole whatever.
Yeah. Here's another instance. This is on the U.S.-Canadian border. CPB officers initiate expedited removal proceedings against Palestinian-born Canadian citizen. I guess each of these things has a headline. That's the headline for that one. According to BTS reporting on 21 December in Buffalo, New York, at the Peace Bridge port of entry, we went over the Peace Bridge, didn't we?
Yep.
Oh, that was fun. It doesn't look that peaceful. Tawfiq Dabuse, born in Palestine, COB?
Country of birth.
Country of birth, Palestine. COC, Canada.
Citizenship,
okay. DOB 525-1942, alien number. He has an alien number. I won't read that. Applied for admission as a B2 visitor for pleasure. Dabuse, accompanied by his daughter Nezreen Dabuse, and then her date of birth, was in a private vehicle driven by Sui Ling Lim, his date of birth. A search of Dabuse's wallet revealed a valid Florida's driver's license, and they give that number, issued to him. Dabuse admitted to owning a Florida business, TNT Art and Frames. Oh, what an unfortunate name for a business if on the watch list. TNT Art and Frames. CPB officers determined that Dabuse was inadmissible to the U.S. as an immigrant, not in possession of an immigrant visa, and initiated expedited removal proceedings. Expedited removal proceedings. That's get the hell out of here now.
I mean, he's only probably like a few meters into the country. It can't be that hard to get rid of him.
Yeah, and as you may note, they didn't use any fingerprint technology for this. Now, Jim, you have...
I have a warning that these documents all have a warning on the bottom, that these documents are for official use only and contain information that may be exempt from public release under the Freedom of Information Act, 5 U.S.C. 552. This document is to be controlled, handled, transmitted, distributed, and disposed of in accordance with DHS policy relating to FOUO information, and is not to be released to the public or other personnel who do not have a valid need-to-know without prior approval of the Homeland Security Operations Center Senior Watch Officer, HSOCSWO, at, should I read the phone number?
Sure.
202-282-8101. Where appropriate, U.S. person identities have been removed. Should your agency have a requirement for a particular U.S. person identity information, contact the HSOCSWO.
And you can see all of these at http://cryptome.org, cryptome.org/HSOMB/HSOMB.htm.
So, don't look unless you're authorized.
Yeah, well, I assume that's all been taken care of, mere formality. Now, Jim, what do you have?
I have a few that sort of give you the flavor of these. Washington, suspicious individual. According to a concerned citizen, on 19 December in Seattle, a possible Middle Eastern male approached the reporting individual conducting a yard sale. The individual asked about laptop computers with high-speed capabilities and walkie-talkies, stating he wished to purchase them for his friends overseas. The reporting citizen also noted the individual had difficulty with driving and understanding U.S. currency. Here's another
one. Wait. That wasn't at a border crossing. That was where?
That was at somebody's yard sale in the middle of the city of Seattle.
So these things don't just encompass crossing the border. Anybody can make a little report here. And
it gets better. I'm going to read some where people call in or send email to Homeland Security. District of Columbia. Concerned citizen reports Middle Eastern male behaving suspiciously on train. Let me just put an aside here. This is the perfect example of no good deed going unpunished. According to a concerned citizen call-in to the Homeland Security Operations Center, 19th December, the concerned citizen witnessed a possible Middle Eastern male behaving suspiciously on an Amtrak train during a trip from New York Penn Station to Washington, D.C. Union Station. The concerned citizen reported that the possible Middle Eastern male switched back and forth between English and Farsi while talking on two different cell phones for 3 hours, the whole length of the trip.
My God. He switched back and forth from English to Farsi.
Speaking to possibly to different people and possibly different lines on different phones. But here's the thing about no good deed going unpunished. She further stated the man acted very discreetly, covering his mouth as he spoke on the phones.
Almost as if he didn't want to be heard.
Almost as if he didn't want to bother people. Now, we all know that that's suspicious because we Americans, of course, don't give a crap about other people and listening into the phone.
I would just like to know, what is a possible Middle Eastern male?
I think that's where they're wearing women's clothes, possibly.
No, what's happening here is they're taking the phone-in call and using, I guess, the lingo that person might have spouted, saying that she wasn't sure if it was a Middle Eastern man. Might be.
It's also that it's hearsay. She says it's a Middle Eastern man, but the guy taking the report wasn't there.
Uh-huh. For all we know, he's speaking Spanish. You know, you don't know.
That's true. That's true, and she didn't recognize it. Here's one that illustrates why we shouldn't be reading this, because it teaches us things we really shouldn't know. Hayward, California. Police investigate Muslims of America members involved in burglaries of cell phone stores. According to law enforcement, the Hayward Police Department is investigating members of the Muslims of America, MOA. Never heard of this. Allegedly, the MOA members involved in burglaries of cell phone stores are tied to 11 burglaries throughout the Central Valley and San Francisco Bay Area, with losses totaling approximately 800 phones. Reportedly, they remove the weather stripping from a window and take the window pane out intact, along with the alarm sensors.
I got one here. This is an off-duty flight attendant observed suspicious behavior on board commercial flight. According to a concerned citizen, off-duty flight attendant called into the Homeland Security Operations Center, HSOC, on 12 December, the off-duty flight attendant observed seven males of possible Middle Eastern descent behaving suspiciously. The off-duty flight attendant and the seven men were flying on board an American Airlines flight from Dallas to San Juan, Puerto Rico. The flight attendant described the suspicious behavior as follows. The men appeared to be agitated and nervous. After the flight was underway, some of the men began moving around the plane, changing seats, strolling through the aisles in a very observant and deliberate manner, sitting in seats with two other people in the row, some which were exit row seats, and walking back and forth to the lavatory multiple times for all men. The flight attendant also noted that none of the men acknowledged or spoke to each other. Reportedly, the American Airlines flight from Dallas to San Juan was used by the 9/11 hijackers for pre-operational planning due to lack of passengers and the ability to blend in with other passengers, in parentheses, Hispanic. This could very well be something, but it could also be very well a bunch of people didn't know each other, and that's why they weren't talking to each other.
I've been on many a flight with other white males, and I've acted as if I did not know them, did not talk to them, and walked back and forth several times to the bathroom after imbibing large quantities of liquid.
Keep going through that. You're probably in there somewhere.
These are kind of late. But, you know, some of these hit home. New York, suspicious photography. According to Ravenswood Station Operations reporting on 2 January, a Hispanic male was taking photographs of the station. The station is a major power supplier for Queens and Long Island. The station is large enough that it may draw tourist attention. Local law enforcement has been notified.
Yeah, it goes on and on. So, I don't know.
But I don't understand. Emmanuel, aren't these, I mean, some of these really sound innocuous, yet these were the ones that made all the way up to the daily briefing.
There's only about 10 each day. Here's another one. New York, suspicious photography. According to NICC reporting, I'm not sure what that is, 10 January, Long Island, a terminal operator for a named U.S. electric utility company, noticed a male individual in front of the terminal taking photographs of the electric utility company terminal and the New York Port Authority terminal. Upon being approached by a terminal operator, the man produced identification, indicating that he was an intern with a named media corporation.
And that made it, you mentioned the taking pictures of trains and things like that, and of course that's something that is getting more and more suspicious. There was an article today, in fact, in the Chicago Tribune Headline, suddenly a suspicious hobby. Train enthusiasts say simply taking photos puts them on the wrong side of the tracks with overzealous security officers. A pretty good article tells how basically the authorities are blowing it by alienating people who may very well wind up being a very good set of eyes. You know, people who care about trains, people who appreciate trains, and people who are taking pictures and notice things, instead harassing them and making them into the threat. Same thing going on here in New York with the ban or the proposed ban for taking pictures inside the subway. Incidentally, the public response to that ended last week, and some kind of decision is due in March. I imagine you can still make all the comments you want. I don't know if they'll be taken seriously.
They'll be taken just as seriously as comments received before the deadline,
exactly.
No doubt.
So. Exactly. Jim, you have one more?
I have one more. The reason I want to read this will become evident at the end. Texas, individual filming aircraft. According to a concerned citizen, 19 December near Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, unnamed individual was filming aircraft. The reporting individual stated that the videographer claimed to be an airplane nut. The reporting individual also submitted a description of the videographer, his vehicle, and a license plate number. And at the end of all these, they have where the source is. This one is concerned citizen email, HSOC, and it gives a number. The point that I'd like to
make...
Wait,
gives a number...
I don't know what it is. It might be the number of the email that came in.
Okay, I'm going to see that number. I'm just curious.
HSOC, and there's four digits followed by a dash and some more digits.
I'm just wondering if they give the email that you can send email to.
That's what I was thinking. This is so absurd that I think that what we should do, especially when the ban on photography in the subway comes in,
mm-hmm.
we should concern ourselves and report every incident. You know, we see Middle Eastern males riding the subway without a fixed destination, or, well, we can't determine it. Write that in. We see somebody carrying a camera, even if they're not using it, they might. Write that in.
How about seeing soldiers in the streets and having your rights taken away? I find that suspicious.
That's good.
Can I send that one in?
We see men who claim to be soldiers, you know, they're not wearing any identification, they wear what appear to be U.S. Army patches or National Guard patches.
Well, I think there's enough suspicious activity for everybody to be able to report something. And,
exactly.
No matter what, it'll definitely be filed someplace. I'm sure about that. We have letters from people, and you can write to us, oth@2600.com. We appreciate all the letters. Obviously, we can't get to all of them, but we try. Dear Off the Hook, I listen to your show every week, and I hear many stories and experience with immigration officers at airports. I would like to share my experience with commodity specialist at JFK Airport. I'm not quite sure what that means. Maybe he's a commodity specialist a commodity specialist. I get it. I work for an import-export company, and I deal with commodity inspectors quite often. Today, I had an experience that made me feel sad and at the same time angry about having to deal with such government officials in this country. I brought a set of export documents to U.S. Customs at the cargo area in JFK Airport to get a release for exporting for one of my clients. As usual, I waited online to wait for my turn to present the document. When my turn came, I approached the window with a polite smile, and the inspector asked me if I have a company ID. I told him I don't carry that. He told me that I must always carry company ID to present documents to Customs because I could have found the document somewhere and tried to get a release and steal the freight and... Didn't make any sense, but I kept quiet. He asked me for some kind of ID to prove that I worked in my company. I showed him my driver's license and an insurance card for my company so that I could prove that I worked for my company. He read something on my license and started to type that on his computer. I tried to look at the screen, but the inspector tilted his screen away so that I couldn't see what was on it. He then asked me where in China I was from and if I have a green card. I told him I'm from Japan and I do have a green card. And he told me to show him the green card. I told him I don't carry the green card with me, but I'd be able to get a copy of it from my office. He said the copy's not good. He threw back my driver's license, insurance card, and export document from the little opening on the glass window and said he can't release the freight for me because I don't have my green card. I was wondering if this was part of U.S. Department of Homeland Security's spot-checking method of illegal immigrants in this country, or if he was just being a big jerk. If it is the latter, it's an abuse of authority, and I feel really sad about living in this country and having to be treated like that just because of who I am. I thought being able to be who I was one of the advantages of this country. I know many of the inspectors are very nice people, but a person like this ruins the good reputation of the U.S. government. And I guess, you know, there's many stories like this around.
I think it's the big jerk answer,
mm-hmm.
And I think you should probably complain if possible.
To whom shall he complain? The bigger jerks in charge?
Yeah, exactly. Try the bigger jerks in charge.
Do we have an email for the bigger jerks in charge? You know, one of the things you can do is tell people about it. You know, telling us it at least makes you feel better, and maybe other people will know about it, too. And who knows? Maybe somebody listening can do something.
Write your congressman.
Yeah, it's doubtful, but anything's always possible. Okay, we have some news on telephones, cell phones, and things like that, as we always do. And again, you can write to us, oth@2600.com. Yes.
Speaking of telephones, we've been fondly talking about relay service because we occasionally get calls from people using it. And in our latest Verizon bills, that little news magazine of one page that they send with it, for those of you who want to know more about 711 relay service, you know, where you type in and an operator acts as your voice or reverse, call the relay inquiry line, 1-800-664-6349. That's 1-800-664-6349. Or if you're using a teletype, 1-800-835-5515.
Okay, I guess if you have time to do that.
Well, Bernie, there's your chance. Type in and ask them to explain this to you. See what comes out.
I imagine he's run off to do just that.
I was in Anchorage a couple of weeks ago flying back from Thailand, and there was a TDD in this little Anchorage airport. And I had 6 hours to kill because of this stowaway from Taiwan slowing everything down. So I dialed the 800-855-1155 toll-free number for TDDs at payphones that let you do directory assistance and set up relay calls, that sort of thing. And so I was just social engineering the TDD operator just because I had nothing else to do. And it turns out she was in Pennsylvania, where I'm from, and I'm in Anchorage. So we chatted back and forth for a couple minutes, and she had to go. But I just thought it was pretty amazing that she was pretty much where I live, and I'm, you know, thousands of miles away, and call in, and I was going to ask her where she was, and she's, like, from my backyard.
That's something. Let's see what we have here. We had a lost cell phone last week, and Mike, I believe you're the person who wound up eventually with the joyful reunion with the owner. We Redbird found the cell phone in the subway.
There are many people involved in this return.
Too many to thank for this for the time we have left. But why don't you tell us how it turned out?
It turned out well. He got his cell phone back.
Got his cell phone back. Okay, it was a bit confusing there for a while because they didn't speak. Everybody was speaking different languages. And we were trying to work it out after the show, and it just didn't happen.
I called them up and tried to speak Esperanto to them, but it just didn't help.
No. But we had a listener write in with some helpful information, because this was a Motorola phone, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. I just want to let you know an easy way to get the phone number of a Motorola phone. Press the menu key, which is the middle button at the top of the keypad, then the pound sign key. The Hello Moto screen is the wake-up banner in most newer Motorola phones. It shows off the color screen. If the phone has not found its way back home, then here are some tips that might help. If it's a T-Mobile subscription phone, there's no default password or PIN for checking voicemail, so they might have left a message in English. Just press and hold the one key. Not sure of laws around other people's voicemails, so check the laws first. To change the language, press the menu key, then select the tools icon looking thing. And the next step will be tricky to find the initial setup menu item. Try the third or fourth item from the bottom. The next menu, we have to find language. Try the fifth item from the bottom. Hopefully one of the menu items will say English. An easy way to get to the recent calls list is press the send button. You can also dial 611 and report it to the service provider, and they can get in touch with that person. I don't know how. Hopefully you won't have to wait too long. Signed, Nick C. Thanks very much for those helpful tips.
Especially anything, if you had turned that phone into T-Mobile, it would still be with T-Mobile at this point.
That's right. Okay, I've listened to Off the Hook off and on over the past several years and always enjoyed the shows. I listen via MP3 downloads or live via streaming audio over the Internet. I have a question that maybe you can put out to your listeners. I recently have connected a home PC to our home stereo, providing us a nice listening environment for Internet radio. My wife enjoys it quite a bit and has Internet radio playing most of the time during the day. My question, what's the best way to get Internet radio into my car? I've looked at mobile satellite service, Internet over packet radio, Internet via my digital mobile phone, which is the best option so far. I'm very interested in making this happen in my vehicles. I'm a network engineer. I've been dying to put a PC in my van as a media center with all DVDs, MP3 MP3s, etc., available on the hard drive. I'd love to have it connected to the internet as well to provide internet radio. Can you help? Signed, Steve. Bernie, I imagine you have an answer to this.
Yes, we actually did this. I met up with you in the New York area. We were trying to track down a pirate radio station, and while we were driving around, or I was following you somewhere, I had an internet radio set up in my car. It was just one of these Sprint PCS connection cards, which is it's not a cell phone. It's effectively a cell phone without the microphone and earphone part in one of these PCM CIA cards. Flies into your laptop. It gives you about 100 to 120 kilobits per second connection. Not terribly high speed, but fast enough for most normal quality streaming audio over the internet. So I was listening to all kinds of internet radio stations on the way up, and I just took the audio output from the laptop into one of those little cassette adapter things that you plug into your cassette deck in your car, and the audio comes out the whole stereo system. It was a lot of fun. I had virtually no dropouts all the way from Philadelphia to New York. It worked very well. And in fact, I had also taken that audio and plugged it into my little Sea Crane FM transmitter and was rebroadcasting some of the internet audio from that I was picking up in my car to nearby cars. And I think I was transmitting the previous week's off the hook that I was downstreaming from 2600.com/off the hook. So you could hear in your car, which was a couple cars ahead of me. So it all worked very well. And unfortunately, you got to pay the, let's say, Sprint PCS for one of these things. The cards are about $100. And they have an unlimited service that's about $80 a month, which is not cheap. But this was a couple years ago, so I imagine it's cheaper now, and there's other carriers that have similar things like Verizon.
Yeah, so that's something to look into, and it does work pretty well, and I think that's the future. This kind of thing will be standard pretty soon.
Far more choices, by the way, than you would ever get with Sirius satellite radio or XM satellite radio, because there's literally thousands of internet radio stations.
All throughout the world, not just in the United States.
Exactly.
All right, we have this letter. Also, I want to get up the phone number, 212-209-2900. We'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit. I recently had to pay my bill for my cell phone, so I logged into T-Mobile's website, and I noticed something new. They had the caller side ringtones that you were talking about on the show a few weeks ago. I decided to sign up and investigate it. The service was very quick to activate, and it's not dependent on your phone. Here's how it works when someone calls a cell phone that has caller side ringtones enabled. Instead of hearing a ring, the caller hears a song or a noise file of your choosing. Noise file. The selection is rather limited on song choices, and I speculate this technology works on call forwarding. I think when you call a cell phone with this enabled, it forwards your call to a central song server where you get to listen to a few lines of a song while the song server goes and dials the number you want. The quality of the music is absolute crap, but it's going over phone lines. I'd be happy to demo this for you guys using my phone. Just give me a call. Signed, Trey. Well, Trey, you know what? We might just do that in a few minutes. So if you're listening, be prepared. We'll try that number, and we'll see what the ring sounds like. Let's read a couple more letters. Give him a chance to hear this if he's listening live and prepare. Dear Off the Hook, I feel I should point out that the security focus article you referred to on the January 11th show, you mentioned T-Mobile should have informed their customers of the security breach. I believe it also says in the same article they do not have to do this if they're still investigating the break-in. That seems to be what they're doing. This makes sense as they would not want to compromise the chances of a successful investigation. Signed, Beowulf. Well, you know, I'd say when the story is in the media and everybody knows about it, that's a good time to say, you know what, the investigation wouldn't be harmed by letting the customers know that maybe they should take some kind of action themselves. And to date, I don't think they've done any of that.
You have to figure that the attacker by now has read the security focus article, so there's really no additional harm in letting the customers know about it.
No, absolutely not. Let's see. I'm sorry, go ahead.
One more cell phone story related to the tsunami. I know a lot of people were concerned about how to get SMS messages to cell phone holders in Southeast Asia, but cell phones are being used another way now. Apparently, the tens of thousands, actually now hundreds of thousands of people who tragically died in that disaster, according to many Thais in Thailand, there's ghosts. These people were killed suddenly, and their spirits are not getting onto the other world because of how they left this world suddenly. And there are a lot of ceremonies being held there, which food and money and cell phones are being given to the spirits to take onto the other world. Now, Mike and I discussed this by email. We weren't really sure from this story in the Wall Street Journal today as to whether these were paper facsimiles of cell phones or actual cell phones. But as Mike pointed out, it's not, you know,
it's a very poorly written sentence in that article.
Yeah. I don't know if I like the idea of the next world, including cell phones.
I'd like to be buried with a jammer.
Yeah, that would be something. Okay, and we have this one other story from a listener. I live on Cape Cod. I'm associated with WOMR 92.1 Provincetown, outermost community radio for Cape Cod. Hooray. Recently, I've been spending Wednesday through Saturday every week on Long Island getting my 85-year-old mom ready to move into an assisted living residence. During this time, I've had the pleasure of listening to your program on several occasions. Here's my problem. My mother got herself a singular AT&T cell phone sometime last spring. As far as I can tell, she never used the account. In fact, I don't think she ever charged the phone until I showed her how, and then she still did not use it. But she paid the bill, and when she had surgery in August for cancer, I continued to pay the bill for her along with all her other bills. At some point in the fall, I called their customer care phone number to attempt to negotiate an end to her unneeded service, but they would not talk to me unless I mailed them a copy of my power of attorney. I gave up in frustration and stopped paying the bill. As luck would have it, they called her last Tuesday, just after I had arrived to finish her packing for the move. They were demanding payment and threatening to discontinue service. I had her put me on and attempt to discuss an end to her contractual obligation. Through the first rep and several layers of supervisors, I was told flat out that she was obligated for the full amount of the contract and no exceptions were possible. Their best offer was to have someone else assume financial liability and use the phone for the remainder of the contract. Is there no recourse? An elderly, infirm person never used or will use the service. I offered to pay up to the present if they'd write off the rest of the contract, and the supervisor was speechless at my audacity. Signed, Bob. What do you think, Bernie?
I think cell phone companies show no sympathy.
I always thought there was just a kind of a late or an early termination fee that you would have to pay. You wouldn't have to pay the entire contract.
Well, usually it amounts to several months of service. It's usually a couple of $100s.
Uh-huh.
So that, depending on which plan you have, that could potentially be more than the number of months basic service you have left to pay. In any case, they're, you know, like, unlike other companies, like even airlines have this, like, situations where if you need your bad health and you need to get to a hospital or something, you can get a discount or whatever. There's I don't think cell phone companies have any sympathy at all for customers who are in situations where they're never going to need the phone. In fact, this bill, they could tell from look at the account that this person never used their cell phone once.
Yeah.
So, you know, they were making pure profit on this account. They never had to switch a single call. So
even if you lose, it's worth it to file a complaint with the FCC or whoever governs cell phones in your particular area. It should be the FCC. And, you know, at least it'll be on record that this is how these people operate. Maybe they can get away with it, but
I'm a little confused that they threaten to terminate the account if you don't pay, which seems to me like it would be just fine.
Yeah, but I imagine that goes on your credit report or something.
It goes on his mother's credit report.
She's
doesn't sound like she's going to be applying for a loan anytime soon. I don't know.
I guess that's there's a point there. Don't pay the bill. Don't pay anything else.
I don't know.
That's the advice we give you right now.
The big problem is that cell phone companies are not regulated as public utilities, and there's no public utilities commission you can turn to, like you can with your local exchange carrier like Verizon or whatever phone company is in your own area.
Mm-hmm.
Cell phone companies aren't regulated that way. I think they should be, frankly, because it would hold them to a little more accountability. But they've managed to evade that for all these years.
Okay. Let's see if we can get a dial tone here. Can we get a dial tone? No, we can't. Let's try now. Okay. These lights aren't working. On top of everything else, now the lights aren't working on the phones. Let's try this one. Okay, there we go. We're going to try that phone number. And we're only going to try this once. If the BAI phone system doesn't cooperate for whatever reason, we're just going to have to do this some other time. But we're going to try and hear this strange ring that T-Mobile now offers. And we should get another tone. Okay, there's the other tone. We're calling a listener. And let's hear what that ring sounds like.
He's going the distance. He's going full speed.
How, is this Trey?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Trey, it's Emmanuel from Off the Hook.
Hi, nice.
Wow, well, that was an interesting demonstration. We called your number, and we heard a song instead of a ring.
Yes, you did.
And I guess that's going to be the future. It didn't sound so bad. It didn't sound that bad.
Well, some of my friends who have called me on their cell phone say it's pretty bad, but I guess you guys are using a landline right now.
Yeah, yeah, but it was very fast. It came on immediately.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed, too. Yeah, it's very quickly, which is, I know, it's kind of boggling. Because the phone system stuff's normally a little bit slower, you know?
It must be very confusing to people that don't know what's going on when they call
yeah.
this number and hear this song all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it's fascinating. As long as we have you on the line, anything else you'd like to tell us?
I just really appreciate what you guys are doing. You guys are doing a great job. Keep it up.
Well, thank you.
And that's really pretty much it. Just wanted to let everyone know that it's out there, and it's actually a really cool and fun thing to do with your phone.
What does it cost, you know?
With T-Mobile, there's a monthly fee of $1.50 plus it's like $2 a song. And what's really cool about it is you can schedule certain songs for certain times of day. You can set it to have certain songs for certain people and all kinds of different things.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you could you record your own songs, or do you have to take from their...
No, you have to use the stuff that's on the website, their website. It's pretty limited right now. There's not very many good songs.
It's almost like an answering machine message, except it comes before an answering machine would come.
Exactly, yeah.
Interesting. All right, Trey, thanks so much for your help.
No problem.
All right, take care. Let's see if we can take some phone calls in the brief time we have left. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
How you doing?
All right. This is Eric from Fort Washington, Maryland.
Okay. What's on your mind?
I haven't really heard you guys or anybody else really talking about what's happening over in Iraq with the technology that they're using to track people, retina scans, databasing, that sort of thing. You guys have any information on that for us?
You mean when they imprison Iraqis or
soldiers? No, folks that are registering to vote,
People
that are getting driver's licenses, business loans, etc.
You know, I haven't heard very much about that myself. I was wondering how the elections are possibly going to work. Is it actually that high tech?
It is that high tech.
Uh-huh.
Retina scans, fingerprints, you know, all of the standard biometric stuff that we've been hearing about for a few years is in use. And I was just wondering how this is being tracked, whether or not they're using that as a test bed for a larger rollout over here, et cetera.
Well, I think that's pretty obvious. That's the test bed for the future. But I imagine we would have to ask people who are over there. So if we do have listeners in Iraq serving with the U.S. military, if they can call us or write us, let us know what they know about this, or contractors or any of those people. We'd like to know what technology they're using, how it works. It certainly is something we should know about.
Yeah. Okay, I'll stand by. I'll keep listening.
All right. Thanks for your call. I didn't even think about that. That's pretty scary.
They have all kinds of ways of holding fake elections now.
Wow. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, Emmanuel. How are you?
How you doing?
Great show. Big fan of for a few years already.
Thank you.
And I know Richie, you know your buddy Richie.
No.
Jeffrey.
Let's skip over that part, but what's on your mind?
I just, you never touch. I know you, I just want to say I love that phone ring thing. It's great, and I'm going to try to get it as soon as I'm able to download my own music onto it, you know?
Yeah. Have a choice. You should have a choice of what you want to put on there.
Exactly. Otherwise, why pay for it?
Uh-huh. Of course.
I just want to say, you never touched on the AIDS controversy about the fraud of HIV, which has never been seen under a microscope, and there is not one accurate test. I don't know if you're aware.
I don't think this really has anything to do with what we're talking about in any sense, but I would suggest you listen to our Daily Health Show, which is on at noon on this radio station. I'm sure that's an appropriate place to discuss all these things. I mean, you know, it's fascinating, but we could spend hours and hours and hours talking about everything under the sun. Let's take another phone call. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Manuel.
How you doing?
Pretty good. Listen, two things. With this new service with Nextel, with Sprint, that's using this talk music, are you getting charged the time you call? Is there supervision? Is it actually a call? Because normally it used to be that you only got charged when the person answered the cell phone.
I would imagine that this is done at the switch, so it should be treated the same way as a normal ring. But, of course, the only way to find this out for sure is to see if you get billed.
Well, Well, because you know when you make a phone call these days, the ring is generated locally, not long distance. Mm-hmm. That's how they get rid of black boxing.
Right.
When you make a call, you're not hearing the far end ring. You're hearing the ring at your local office. So if you're getting the music, you actually got to be connecting to that server.
Or they have some kind of way of transmitting it without returning supervision. I don't know. It's a very good question.
I'm sorry for interrupting. If you read your Sprint PCS contract, and if you're a Sprint PCS customer, and I unfortunately still am, the billing starts ticking as soon as you hear the ringing.
We're not talking about the person making a phone call from the cell phone. We're talking about somebody from another phone or from a landline calling your cell phone.
Right.
That's a good point.
When does the supervision start? And number two, you were talking about the problem with that old lady I just heard. A while back, I had a big fight with Nextel when they went from 6-second billing to 1-minute billing, and they said, well, tough luck. We can do whatever we want.
That's pretty much what they do. That is pretty much what they do. Listen, we're out of time.
Have a great day, guys.
Thanks. Thanks for your call. And thanks, everybody, for calling in. Again, our address for email, oth@2600.com, or you can send us paper mail. Yes, that's very exciting, too. Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street, New York. New York.
10005.
All right, and it's in the USA for those of you who aren't. Again, we will be back next week with a special fundraising show. Actually, it's going to be our regular time slot, 7 to 8. And then the week after that, we won't be on. The week after that, we won't be on. But we'll be back the week after that. And until next week, it's Emmanuel Goldstein. Have yourselves a good night.
Invited to a series of talks and open discussion beyond capitalism, Marx's concept of an alternative. What ideas can help break through the prevailing notion that there is no alternative? Can we conceptualize a socioeconomic system that embodies the kind of society we are for? This series is organized by News and Letters Committees and is held at Identity House, 39 West 14th Street, Room 205. The five classes are free of charge. All classes start promptly at 7 p.m. on Sundays, starting January 23rd, and continue at two-week intervals. For more information and to receive copies of all readings, call 212-663-3631. That's 663-3631.